This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. 10 weeks after the end of the regular legislative session, lawmakers approved a budget for the 2018 fiscal year that begins on July 1st. Both the House and Senate approved the budget bill late Friday night that includes no new revenue. The bill has not yet been signed by Governor Jim Justice, who said earlier in the week that he would consider vetoing the measure because of some of the severe cuts. Jesse Wright spoke with State House reporter Ashton Mara about the budget bill that has been approved.
Seems like all we talked about during the special session was tax reform. Lawmakers went back and forth for weeks, but no tax reform bills ultimately passed. So does that mean there is no new revenue for next year?
Right. So both chambers were adamant that they didn't want to pass tax increases, but they were willing to take on tax reform to create some of that new revenue. For the House, tax reform was this broadening the base, or essentially getting rid of some exemptions in the consumer sales and use tax, like cell phones and gym memberships, but other things too. For the Senate, increasing the consumer sales tax in order to restructure and drastically lower the personal income tax was their tax reform initiative. They believe that that change to the personal income tax will incite business owners to create new jobs and potentially attract new people to the state. Now, Justice got on board with the Senate plan, as we remember, but the House members and Senate Democrats, they refused to budge on the issue and back the changes to the personal income tax. So in the end, we ended up with no new revenue to contribute to this final budget that they passed on Friday.
So Governor Justice proposed a $4.35 billion budget at the start of the session. The legislature ended up with a $4.225 billion budget. What's the difference, and what did the governor not get that he wanted?
So there were some big things that the governor definitely wanted and had pushed for in that initial budget. One of those, of course, was that 2% across-the-board teacher pay raise that would have accounted for about $20 million in spending. He wanted that $25 million Save Our State Fund, that fund in the Department of Commerce that was going to be used to help attract businesses to West Virginia. He wanted an increase in funding for marketing through the Division of Tourism. And then, of course, he also wanted that restructuring of the severance tax on coal. Essentially, it was going to put new tiers in. So when the price per ton of coal goes up, the tax rate would have gone up as well. But when the price per ton was low, the rate would have dropped. Justice said that would help the industry and keep miners working. But of course, all of those things, those legislative changes that would have come in a revenue bill, those were not included and ultimately not included in the budget.
So Justice did get something he wanted. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Right. So the governor had this roads funding package that he was adamant about passing through the regular session and into this special session. Now, if you'll remember, the legislature did approve the bond initiative during the regular session, allowing that the voters can approve a bond. But he didn't get his funding for that bond. Those did come in this special session. So he got a small increase to the wholesale price of gasoline, a 1% increase on the privilege tax, which is essentially the tax that you pay when you buy a vehicle and then you register it in the state. And then he got increases to the division of motor vehicle fees. Now, that money doesn't go into general revenue, but it goes into the state road fund. And lawmakers can't really touch that money. It goes toward paving and the construction of roads and bridges. But in the governor's revenue estimates, which is essentially where the governor's office says this is how much money we're going to bring in next year, they anticipate $130 million in additional income tax and sales tax revenue based on the fact that these bills will create the money to spend on roads and therefore more people will be hired for the construction.
So there were other cuts in this bill, though, most contentious of which seems to be to higher education funding.
Right. So the higher ed lines, they were cut largely at 4.5% to 4.6% across the board. But West Virginia and Marshall universities take a larger cut at 6.6%. And Shepherd University and Blue Ridge Community and Technical College, because they have such a low level of per pupil funding from the state anyways, they did not take a cut at all this year. But there was a lot of arguing in both chambers over these cuts to higher ed, more so in the House of Delegates, though, where several Democratic lawmakers stood up and said that the state was essentially balancing its budget on the backs of young people, on the state's future leaders, and they were making it more difficult for them to afford and education. What both finance chairs have said, the majority leaders in both chambers, the Speaker and the Senate President, is that when it comes to cutting a budget, there are only a couple of places to go. And right now, the only places that are left are higher education and then, of course, Medicaid.
So with Medicaid, that was also a very contentious area. But the legislature found a way around cutting it in this budget, right?
So kind of. In the budget passed on the final night of the regular session that was then vetoed by the governor in April, they cut Medicaid by between $30 and $35 million. And then, of course, Medicaid funding is matched on a 3-to-1 basis by the federal government, so it would essentially have a much larger impact. This budget, they found a very technical way around making those cuts. They're banking on this idea that the state is going to have a surplus in three areas by July 31st of this year, in general revenue, in lottery revenue, and in special lottery revenue. So the budget bill says that any surplus monies, or about $25 million of surplus monies from those three accounts, will go directly into the Medicaid line item at the end of the July. So we're really relying on money that's not there yet to avoid cutting the line so that they don't lose those federal matching dollars.
So this is the second budget impasse we've seen in 2 years. What's your sense from lawmakers about whether we'll be in this position again next year?
Senate Finance Chair Mike Hall said on the floor Friday night that this budget doesn't do anything to take care of future deficits. They didn't make drastic cuts, and they didn't do anything to create new revenue for the upcoming fiscal year. So in the words of Mike Hall, we're essentially likely to be in the same position again next year. Now, what could change is if the economy of the state turns around and West Virginians start going back to work at higher numbers, increasing the personal income tax line, or, you know, if the coal industry turns around, it has started to pick up a little bit and we're starting to see more severance tax dollars. But if the economy in terms of the energy industry and gas and natural gas and coal turns around, we could see a bump in revenues. But I'm not sure that any lawmaker anticipates the economy to change so quickly in the next year that we can avoid this kind of budget impasse yet again. Now, the Senate Majority Leader, Ryan Ferns, he says tax reform isn't going away, that his chamber, the majority in his chamber, is committed to finding a way to reduce the personal income tax as a way to set West Virginia on a new course when it comes to the economy and in turn when it comes to the state budget. But I guess, you know, we've got a year now to see how that goes.
That was State House reporter Ashton Mara speaking with Jesse Wright about the budget bill that lawmakers approved on Friday, now at the state capitol. West Virginia Public Broadcasting is a state agency and is partly funded by the budget bill. This coming Friday marks the one-year anniversary of flooding that left 23 dead in West Virginia and thousands of homes and businesses destroyed. West Virginia Public Broadcasting is spending the next few days hearing from some of the people who were affected by the flood and the process of rebuilding their communities. This morning we visit Greenbrier County, where 300 homes were destroyed. Over the past year, volunteer groups have rebuilt about 50 of those homes, with dozens in the works. About 30 homes in Greenbrier County have been renovated with the help of volunteer groups. Musician and pastor John Wyatt escaped the flood with his life, but lost all of his possessions, including his musical instruments and years of recorded oral histories with his family and friends. When we talked to him last year, he shared his concerns about his community, but he didn't really mention his own troubles. Roxy Todd checked in with Wyatt to see how he's doing 1 year after the flood.
We heard from John Wyatt last year, right after the flood. You might remember his song that he sang about the events of June 23rd.
Muddy water, muddy water, muddy water flood our land.
In a quiet neighborhood in Raynell, John just completed renovations on its one-story home. Volunteer workers with the faith-based Appalachian Service Project spent the past year helping him put up drywall, cleaning out the mud, putting on a new porch, and making the house livable again. Since the flood, John's been renting a house outside of town. He shows me around his old home, which has taken months to rebuild.
I'm not in the home yet because I haven't got everything moved back into it. But all this was destroyed the water line.
But he still can't shake the memories of that tragic night when he joined the rescue operations, paddling a rescue boat and saving people who were trapped in the floodwaters.
Come and help us. Come and help us. Came the cries out of the night.
As time goes on, we're struggling to get through the after effects of what took place during the flood. You were filming me then, and I was talking about how I could hear those cries of the people in the dark.
Greenbrier County, West Virginia.
Sadly, 15 people died in Greenbrier County during the flood. Many of them were John's friends and neighbors in Raynell.
And for weeks and weeks, you know, that was something that I'd wake in the middle of the night and I would think about that.
This past year, he's been so busy working on his home and volunteering to help other people, he hasn't had a lot of energy to do the things he used to do, like play music or sit on his back porch and relax over a cup of coffee. John isn't the only one who's trying to get back to normal. More than 120 homeowners in Raynell have applied to FEMA for help demolishing their homes. That's a huge loss for a community with just under 1,500 people. John drives through town, pointing out the homes that were lost.
It's a little frightening to look at our town, and I've lived here all my life, and I know where each person lived, and so many of them, and those houses are gone now, and I'm the only house left in this entire block, and all the other homes, eight of them are gone.
Across town from John Wyatt, Sharon G. Martin has just moved into a small one-bedroom apartment. She lost her home in the flood, and she's been living with her family for the past year.
My apartment came to me, and I'm excited for the new experience.
Today, a volunteer named Dave Lumsden, chairman of the Greater Greenbrier Long-Term Recovery Committee, is bringing her a new donated mattress and a box spring.
There we go.
Oh, that's perfect.
We connect dots. We connect need with relief agencies, government agencies, and also through our nonprofit partners. So many groups have come in over the last year to help us.
Dave volunteers for the Greater Greenbrier Long-Term Recovery Committee. It's a local organization that helps coordinate resources to help flood victims, like Sharon. Her face is worn with worry from the past year, but her bright green eyes are shining today as she realizes she won't have to sleep on the floor tonight.
I've always been a positive thinker, so I always have faith and hope for the best. And things are falling in place, and I'm happy. You know, it's better now, and it's going to get better.
Sharon has been waiting to get an apartment for the past 10 months while she stayed with her daughter. Others had to leave Raynell or West Virginia to try to settle someplace new. John Wyatt has watched some of his close friends move away.
Yeah, I pastor a small church outside of Raynell, and we're down to just bare minimum now because we were a small church before the flood. We're a really small church now since the flood because we've had people who just had to move away.
Raynell was struggling economically before the flood. With the decline in the timber industry, many jobs here have disappeared during John's lifetime. But there's a positive change in the air, too, something he hasn't seen in decades.
I do see something happening that wasn't happening before the flood. I see people working together. I see a community coming together.
Thousands of volunteers have poured into Raynell this past year, most of them from out of state.
That spirit of volunteering that people have brought into our community, I think that's helped us too because it's reinvigorated people themselves to get back into doing something that helps others and that's benefit to others and not just to ourselves. Not only did they come in and hang sheetrock and paint houses and do all the work that they've done, but they brought hope to people again.
Though we seek mirth and beauty, laughter bright and gay, there are frail forms waiting by our door.
Rebuilding this town will take years. John says he's looking forward to volunteering again next year with the Appalachian Service Project as they continue to help people who lost their homes in the flood.
To say, all hard time, come again, no more.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Roxy Todd in Raynell.